Hello and welcome back to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. We're Michael and Matthew from Cotrello Games, and it's time to get into some of the Nintendo news that's happened this week. It's been kind of a dry week for news. They've officially released the Crown Tundra DLC, so we'll get into some very, very, very early impressions of that. But besides that, we've got a game being re-released from 30 years ago. Fire Emblem, a game that was previously reserved for only Japanese audiences, is officially making its way to the West, at least in English. I haven't seen any other languages confirmed, but they will be bringing that game and an anniversary edition on December 4th. And you can get the physical edition with a bunch of art and knickknacks, a replica cartridge. And then there is, of course, the digital version that you can purchase on the eShop. This is, interestingly enough, I guess we'll get into the juicy details in a moment, but yeah, Matthew, you're gonna get Fire Emblem? Is today the day where you're gonna play Fire Emblem for the first time?
Probably not. I mean, I'll probably try it out just as far as, having or being able to speak to it when we talk about it on the show when it comes out, because I'm sure we inevitably will, but, I think the biggest takeaway I have from this is not the fact that they're localizing this game, not the fact that it's not Mother 3 that's being localized instead, because that's the game people really want to be localized and have been begging for years. But I think the biggest takeaway from this is the return of the Nintendo Vault stuff. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but this is a limited release, just like the Super Mario All-Stars, 3D All-Stars. And they haven't confirmed when it's going to be available until, to my knowledge, but I just think this is the start of some really bad trends. And, you know, I saw somebody going in depth with this, and I thought it was really interesting, but they're like, ever since Nintendo became the richest company in Japan, they've had overwhelming success with the Nintendo Switch, they've become progressively more anti-consumer and probably have exhibited some of their worst practices in their entire history, or the entire company history. And it's very weird that as soon as they got on top and they're dominating the console market, it just is odd that they're taking this opportunity to I don't want to say stick it to fans or consumers, but I don't really know how else to put it. It's like they're really doing some silly things. Which I don't care to play this game. I honestly don't, but I don't really understand the point of making it a limited release. Some people are saying it's because it's a collector's edition, which I understand, but why does the digital version go away? The same thing with Super Mario 3D All-Stars. It absolutely makes zero sense. So that's the main thing I took away from this. And it's a shame because there's a lot of people who do like Fire Emblem that were talking about how it kind of kills their excitement for the game. Just the notion that it's going to be another limited release, it's scary going forward, because who knows if Nintendo's just going to start doing this with their games, period. I mean, Super Mario 3D All-Stars is a normal retail game for them, so who's to say that other games going forward they don't just make it a limited release so that you're clamoring to buy it as fast as possible. So yeah, that was my main takeaway. I honestly lost focus of the fact that this game's being localized just because of that.
Yeah, well, I saw the original announcement on just browsing Twitter, and I saw Fire Emblem, the original. I was like, oh, they're getting that in Japan. That's cool. And then I just like looked a little bit closer and like, oh, we're getting it translated, because most of the Fire Emblem series has not been available to anyone outside of Japan. Every game up until Fire Emblem 7, I think. It's kind of hard to keep track, but the game with Roy in it that came on the Game Boy Advance was the last Japan-only game, and then they expanded it to the U.S. with what they called Fire Emblem in the West. They just did no other tagline, but that was the one with Hector and Roy's dad and Lynn. And then the game has been a very, very niche hit on the every system since. It got huge on the 3DS, and the Switch version is doing well. So it's nice to be able to go back now and get some of these characters that you might recognize from playing Fire Emblem Heroes and see where they originally came from in the original story. I've played this game through means we will not discuss here. I've played like translations, and fans have made translations of these games for eons. So while it's probably not that novel to people who already like Fire Emblem, I think that, you know, it's nice to have like an official version that we can support and say, yes, please, we would like more of this. Is what I would have said if they didn't pull the stupid Nintendo Vault thing. Come on, guys. Can we stop? Can we stop this, guys? Like, for I want to just be excited for this, and they're on day one and all that stuff. But this puts us in this lose-lose situation where if I buy this game, I'm telling them, like, yes, I enjoy this abuse. If you make me feel like I won't have the chance to get it later, I'll buy it now, and you can extract extra value from me that way. And then if I don't buy it, it's like, no one cares about Fire Emblem's old games. Don't translate the better Fire Emblem games that we could get in the future, because, you know, this one, this is a, I know it's the 30th anniversary of this game, but honestly, the fact that they're translating this at all, this is a test. This is a test to see how well something like this would do. How much value can they extract out of a, what is at this point, according to the website for the listing of the game, a 30 megabyte file. How much money can they make from a 30 megabyte file? And then they're just going to kind of take that up the line. Can they sell us Genealogy of the Holy War for $30 if they translate that Super Nintendo game? You know, there's all this stuff that we've got going here. And it's also not that special that they're translating this Fire Emblem game in particular, because it's already been remade and localized on the right? Was it localized on the DS?
Yeah, it
I'm pretty
was,
sure
but
it was.
I think it was, but it's that it didn't include one of the other games that's included in this. I read something about that there is a difference between this version and the Nintendo DS version.
Well, I think the Nintendo DS version was the one with the extra content. Because, yeah, this was the original Fire Emblem, which, I mean, it's really cool from a historical perspective, because this genre of strategy role-playing games was, you know, almost in a sense invented by Intelligent Systems with this and the first iteration of Advance Wars. I forgot what it was called. But they basically invented this genre. So I think from a historical perspective, it's awesome. And from a historical perspective, you should do this work and then just leave it up so that people who want to learn about games and the lineage of them can do so. And then you'll get paid in the process. But this silly business where we Papa takes our toys away when on April 1st. I don't know, man. Maybe this is all just a big epic gamer prank where on April 1st, they're going to be like, April Fool's Day. You can keep your games. But I'm not counting on it.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like I said, I mean, to me, it's just one of those things. I mean, even if I was excited about this, which I'm not, I don't really care about Fire Emblem, and any interest I used to have in it has been watered down due to the what's the word I'm
force
looking for?
Feeding.
Right. Well, just the what is that word when you oversaturation of Fire Emblem and Super Smash Bros. Where it just feels too much, and because there's so many characters and they're all almost exactly the same in my eyes, they're just kind of, you know, they lack personality or charisma. You know, they kind of just say these cliche anime lines and, you know, for every single attack that they do. And it's just made me lose interest in ever trying out Fire Emblem. And but even if I was really interested in this, you know, I mean, even if they were, you know, if Donkey Kong Country had never made it to the United States and it was always in Japanese, I don't know what you would need to localize. I guess translating Cranky Kong's jokes, but just whatever. If they had, even if they were doing something like that, just the crummy business practice behind this is just it takes the wind out of its sails, like, completely. I just think it makes it, like, a little hard to enjoy. And I think a lot of people are coming onto this where, you know, like, somebody was talking about yesterday that somebody is a big YouTuber, but that they love Nintendo, but this kind of stuff just, you know, more and more just you know, kind of gets you out of that nostalgia phase and more into like the, you know, like, do I really want to support this even though I care about the games this company makes? Because that's how I feel now. I just hate even like just even supporting that type of thing. Even like I said, even if it was something I was interested in, if I was interested in Super Mario 3D All-Stars, I still wouldn't have wanted to purchase that just because of, you know, the type of precedent that that sets. And I got to be honest, the cynical side of me, I was happy when I went to a local GameStop here around the Atlanta area. And somebody was telling me who worked there. They ordered like 80 copies of the game and they ended up having like 65 of them like 2 weeks after it came out that like nobody was really buying it. And I know it sold pretty well, but I think it's not selling as well as Nintendo expected it to. And I just think it goes to show you that, like, you know, if you want to release some cheap port and then attach some bad business practice to it, I think that's going to deter some people. Because like I said, even if I did have any interest in it, just that alone makes me not want to support it. And that's how I feel about this Fire Emblem game. So it's cool that it's being localized, though. Hopefully this means something for games like Mother 3 that people have been asking for years, especially because Fire Emblem fans, you know, again, they get like everything they want. You know, I saw some people complaining about how Earthbound fans are reacting to this. And somebody was like, I mean, you have to realize like Fire Emblem just gets so much. And, you know,
well, now they do.
Yeah.
Now they do. Half the series is still locked behind the Nintendo vault.
Sure. And
only being Japanese. But
yeah, I mean,
besides
I mean, I just mean that ever since, you know, ever since Super Smash Bros., it feels like it's been done a lot of justice, whereas Earthbound cannot say the same whatsoever. And it's funny because I feel like if they ever remastered Earthbound the way they did Pokemon Let's Go, I honestly think it would be more popular than Fire Emblem. Like, you can take that to the bank, man.
Oh, for
sure.
Bold
prediction. And,
oh, for sure.
And I just think because of that, like, they could do the same thing with Mother 3, and I think it would be twice as big. So hopefully that means something like that going forward can be expected. But, yeah, that's kind of how I feel on the whole situation.
Yeah. Yeah, which I'll say, you know, like, I'm excited. I'm definitely going to grab it. You know, I've played through the entire DS version of the game. I kind of fiddled around with this one, and, you know, it's nice that they put in a lot of features, like you can fast forward the game, you can create bookmarks to get over its incredible difficulty. It's going to be, a lot of people who are newer Fire Emblem fans who have been playing since they invented casual mode will be surprised at how difficult this game is. But I'm looking forward to playing through it as I do with most Fire Emblem games. And really more so, I just want to put my money in and be like, okay, make another one of these. Even if you want to be, you know, a little scummy about it and do your little Disney Vault trick again, you know, whatever. If it gets us those games that we've been asking for, you know, 15 years, I'll play ball. The other thing is that, like, what's really funny about this is that that on Twitter, and I know this isn't like a good measure of everything, this game wasn't trending. Mother 3 was trending.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
because, like, they just opened the floodgates to, like, okay, so can we have Mother 3 now? Please. Please. And you know, much like this game and Mother 3 and every other Fire Emblem game, they have fan translations that I almost guarantee you, if Nintendo just got in touch with the people who wrote it and were like, can we use this for free? They'd be like, sure, yes. I just love this game so much. That's why I spent, you know, hours and hours of my life coding in the translations into an emulated version of the game. And I think that I would hope that this sets a precedent for some translations, and maybe even bundle some of these together as like the Japan collection. I mean, there's enough weebs in the U.S. who will pick that up. And I love Fire Emblem. I think I would like Earthbound a lot as well. I haven't ever got the chance to go into it, but I'm sold on Earthbound before I play it, just because of the aesthetic. I mean, like, you know, Fire Emblem is special in that it it helped to invent the strategy RPG genre that I love so much. But at the same time, it's about dragons and swords and horses and wizards. And you know, that's all a bit of a saturated market, whereas Earthbound is like this, you know, a Stranger Things type of thing, 50 years before Stranger Things happened. These kids that are in a present day setting with some social commentary, some extraterrestrial life invading, and psychic powers as well. Like, I mean, it's just got such a style to it that I think is really timeless. And so if they were to bring back Earthbound with even a, you know, I think you do a cheap translation and you sell that, and then like 5 years after that, you do the real remake. Where if you look at the concept art of Earthbound, you see that that it has a much different style to it than the actual game. And, you know, that's sort of like clayish looking render of Ness that you can get in Super Smash Brothers and some of the other characters. They almost look like they're made out of like clay, or that they're plastic figurines or something. You could make a game that just looks like that. Give it the Link's Awakening treatment and have that be a new Earthbound game without having to add to the story. And I think that checks every box. You know, you don't have to upset Itoi for, you know, adding to his series that's already been concluded, and you can give everybody what they want, which is a new Earthbound game.
Oh, I would, man, I'd pick that up day one, man. I've never actually played Earthbound, but it's a game, you know, you just vicariously live through other people who have enjoyed something, and it has this cult following that I've watched so many videos that just talk about it, and it just looks like a game. Like, I'm not even a huge RPG fan, but it's like you said, the fact that it's not about, like, that, honestly, that's my biggest problem with the RPG genre, is that outside of Pokemon and, like, what, the Paper Mario games, it seems that most RPGs are always about anime-style characters who are very, like, cliche and corny, for lack of a better term, and everything's about swords and mana, and you know, I'm tired of it, you know, like that's my problem, is that it's always about the same kind of stuff, whereas like Earthbound, like you said, it's like Stranger Things, and it's actually inspired a lot of different things. Like, the creators of South Park actually said the setting for South Park is inspired by Earthbound, just like kids in a neighborhood, and you got your, you know, downtown areas and stuff like that. But it's kind of just them like exploring the world and finding themselves in precarious situations, you know, with Earthbound being related to like robots and aliens. And but yeah, I mean, I just think it would be really interesting to bring that back in like a Link's Awakening style, or to me, I like the idea of like a Pokemon Let's Go style, you know, and you literally just like do the Crash Bandicoot treatment, where it's the exact same game just with new graphics. And I feel like that would be amazing, and I'd be so much more excited for that than you know, anything Fire Emblem related, because Fire Emblem gets everything it wants. And so, you yeah. know, it's just it's
nowadays,
just kind of,
which is what,
well, I was gonna
it's
say
a good
just,
thing, because they're about to can it with Awakening. But yeah, I mean, I like that the Fire Emblem bounce back, but you know, like, spread that love to some other franchises, my guys.
Yeah, well, it's just like you were saying, it's just kind of funny that, you know, Fire Emblem gets announced and it's Earthbound that kind of gets all the attention, or what everybody's talking about. But I just noticed, and I forgot that you wrote this down in our notes, but it looks like the Fire Emblem game is available exactly until March 31st, which you pointed out is the end of the fiscal year. And that just tells me it's not even about driving sales for this. I think it's just about, like, this may be a thing where maybe the shareholders of Nintendo are like asking for this kind of thing, because it's probably better for business and it's probably to appease them. But it's available until the fiscal year ends, and then it won't be because that's when, you know, after that they can focus on different things.
Yeah. You know, that's my, you know, everybody's like, why does everything end on March 31st? Is like Nintendo gonna like just stop doing things on April 1st? It's like, no, that's that it just lines up perfectly with their fiscal year. And so if they can drive more sales during this year, then they'll have a really impressive portfolio to show to their investors and hopefully, you know, do you know, make them happy with that. That whole bit. And and honestly, I mean, you know, the dangerous thing is that there's dangers on both sides, because yeah, this is obviously for them to have a good fiscal year. I think, you know, they probably came up with this idea while the pandemic was really heating up, and it, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in many businesses. It's kind of hilarious that you'd want to pull this stuff in the game industry, because game spending has skyrocketed. I mean, this has been the best time to be a platform holder with a digital storefront for video games. Nintendo's making hand over fist money right now. Like, they are doing super well. And so they really do not need to do this to you know, create extra excitement. They would have gotten a boost in sales just by proxy of people being home more often. And you've seen just explosive sales data for not only the 3D All-Stars collection, where they're trying to, you know, kind of put their hand on the scale and make that a success, but you even just look at Animal Crossing and a bunch of the other Switch games. I mean, it, you know, from quarter to quarter, the sales data for these games has been insane. I mean, you know, on the Wii U, the best-selling game, Mario Kart 8, was, you know, they had some really interesting information in terms of how the attach rate of the game. And the attach rate is how many people have a Wii U and also have Mario Kart 8. And they got something like half of their, what's it called? Like half of everybody who got a Wii U got Mario Kart 8 on the Wii U. And so like, that's incredible. That's almost unheard of. Or it was over half. We had 8.5 million sales for Mario Kart 8. And then we had 14 million Wii U's that were sold. So Mario Kart is just kind of a freak of nature. And even at the time, like with compared to other like PlayStation 4 successes, that is insane. And then, you know, after that, it's like, well, Super Mario 3D World, I mean, they bundled that game with a bunch of consoles. That only sold 6 million, so like almost half. New Super Mario Bros., almost half. Things of that nature. But you look at the Nintendo Switch, and the amount of games that they're selling on this thing are just bonkers. I mean, to have like multiple games, you know, by the end of this console generation, we're going to have probably at least 5 games that sold over 20 million copies. And, you know, for a little bit of context, like Nintendo hasn't seen that type of success outside of the Wii, basically ever. You know, they have not pushed that many copies of any games. It's a very short list. It's basically New Super Mario Bros., Mario Kart DS, Nintendogs, Mario Kart Wii, New Super Mario Bros. Wii. And that's about it. That are you know, over 20 million copies sold. And here already, I mean, we're only halfway through this Switch generation. Mario Kart 8, Animal Crossing, Smash Ultimate, Breath of the Wild's pretty close, Pokemon Sword's pretty close, Mario Odyssey's pretty close, and it's just like it's crazy to think that in an environment like this, you're like, oh, we got to put our hand on the scale and try and do this do this thing where we try and, you know, increase sales to have a strong fiscal year. And I mean, the danger in this is that like you can't capture this lightning in a bottle a second time. Like next year is probably not going to be as good as this year, no matter how you slice it, because you've already pulled your predatory tactic. You have unleashed a mountain of Mario merchandise, and you had the pandemic, which, you know, hurt most people, but for the game industry, my goodness, what a boost in sales. And they're not going to have this year next year, so they're inevitably going to disappoint these investors, because the growth is not going to continue at this pace, and they're disappointing fans because they're, you know, pulling out all the stops to kind of, you know, get us to spend extra money during a pandemic. And you know, that we're like, people are eventually just not going to be cool with it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things. I think it's eventually going to catch up to them, but you know, I mean, it's like you pointed out in one of our other shows, you know, they're the richest company in Japan right now. So they just, I think they're just rolling with it. And I think that's usually what happens with a lot of these companies, man, is that they, you know, they get you to invest in what they're trying to sell you. And then once it becomes a really big and hot commodity, all of a sudden, you know, they start doing crummy things. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we talk about that in business all the time, like a platform like YouTube, how, you know, it used to be like, man, you could get on YouTube and make all kinds of money. And now you still can, but it just gets harder and harder and harder and harder. But that's because YouTube's become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So that's just kind of how the nature of how these things work is, as soon as a company starts making a lot of money, they're like, well, we can make our profit margins even larger if we institute some of these practices. And I don't understand that. It's like,
well, there are those certain money-making moves. Like, you'll see it, usually the way to break into mass market business these days is to offer people a deal that's so good that they can't refuse it. You know, like Netflix, just a few bucks a month and you can stream everything, and the price will, you know, continue to rise as the years go on. Amazon Prime for a year of free shipping is like, oh my gosh, it was only this much. And then, you know, every couple of years they're just increasing the price of how much Amazon Prime costs and decreasing the price of how much they pay everybody that makes Amazon Prime work. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of mass market business, and a lot of times it can feel very predatory, which, you know, like, honestly, none of this really offends me personally. I don't care. Thankfully, I'm in a financial position to, you know, consciously make the decision of, do I want to buy this or not without it like hurting me too much. But there are going to be some people who miss out on Mario 3D All-Stars because they just chose other games for Christmas or what have you. And that's going to be sad for them. And, you know, I do think that they're eroding at some of the trust that they've built over the last 30 years, that they're going to make a quality product that's worth the money. And, you know, they're cutting back on the quality and amping up the predatory business tactics. And yeah, I mean, it's just the only problem that I ever have with this is seeing people, like, you know, put on their suit of armor to defend these companies like they're, you know, their parents or something. It's just like, dude, you do business with Nintendo. And, you know, if you guys have the same interests and you are exchanging value and everybody's happy at the other side of it, like, that's great. But, like, man, they're not going to show up for your school recital. So you don't need to like defend them online. And you know, I think they, every once in a while, they dip their toes into the same type of, the same type of slime that EA and Activision and King and all those people that you don't like dip into, but, people are just okay with it, 'cause it's Nintendo. You know, it's like, Miyamoto did this interview and he was like, you know, all these other people are doing these predatory microtransactions and loot boxes, but we feel like if we make a game that's good and worth a premium price, that people will pay it. And so that's what we're going to do. And then like 3 weeks later, they come out with Dragalia Lost, which has subscriptions and loot boxes and microtransactions. And then they did Dr. Mario and Mario Kart. So, I mean, if you think that microtransactions are just never going to come to the Switch... Well, and reality check, they will do it as soon as they feel like you'll be okay with it.
And it's funny because I remember they were talking about how Super Mario Run, that's why they were selling it for a set price and they didn't want to be like these other app games. And then Mario Kart Tour is the complete antithesis of that. And it's honestly the most predatory app game I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, I really can't think of one that's any worse as somebody who tried to play it. So I just, yeah, it's... It's very weird that they just completely did a 180 as far as that goes. And, you know, it's I don't know, it almost makes me feel like, and I hate to say it, but I feel like almost when Iwata passed away, you know, it's kind of like Apple with when Steve Jobs passed away. It seems like that company pivoted and started doing things that Steve Jobs never would have been okay with or been on board with. And I feel like Nintendo's almost doing the same thing, because I feel like Iwata... had too much of a conscience, so to speak, to not do some of these things. And it feels like ever since his passing, they've completely pivoted to doing things that they otherwise would have condemned years ago. And I find that to be really, really disturbing, you know, and
which,
it gives me anxiety as a fan going forward.
Yeah, I think the reason that they never did microtransactions is because, I mean, there is a cost to it. You know, you're going to alienate a certain amount of your fan base. You might eat into the game sales that you would have otherwise had, and you got to punch the numbers to see if it's worth it. And that's why when you know, there was the Avengers game that was that like, you know, nowadays you get up on the stage on E3 and you're like, no loot boxes, and everybody's like clapping like seals, because, you know, oh, you're not going to abuse us that way. It's just like, man, that's because they want to sell you on something else. They've got a Verizon Captain America suit that they're trying to sell you, and they do, you know, an individual battle pass for every character so that you can, you know, hopefully spend, you know, $300 on the game instead of $60. And I think Nintendo's always just been calculating that cost, and that's why they haven't brought it to the Switch yet. But if there is ever a day where they think they'll get away with it, they're going to show up. The next Mario Kart, if they feel like they could get you on loot boxes, they will absolutely package Diddy Kong in a loot box. Absolutely, nothing will stop them. And you know what's the only horrendously ironic part is that there's going to be those group of people where, like, I mean, you know, it's really not that big a deal.
You should just be grateful that it's not worse. I hate those people. The people that tell you should be grateful that a company that is in business because of consumers like you, that you should be grateful that they're taking it easier on you in their perception of things. I just can't wait until eventually there's a Super Smash Bros. Game, and the way you unlock fighters is by buying them, and they do it like a League of Legends thing where, or Smite, where every couple of days you get different characters that you can play around with, so it gives you a taste for that character, and then a couple of days later they go away, and then they say, well, if you want to keep playing them, you have to buy them. And I guarantee you that'll be a thing one day, just one day. It'll take that kind of extreme thing where people will finally be like, no way, dude. Like, but I guarantee you people still do it.
Yeah.
I won't, but...
But, yeah, and it's so weird, you know, hosting a Nintendo podcast and being kind of, like, negative every week. We're really not trying to. We love Nintendo games. We have a long history with them, but, like, I just got to call this stuff like I see it because, you know, and you know, understand the duality of what I'm saying is that, like, I'm excited that they're doing this with Fire Emblem. I'm going to pick up the digital version and have a good old time with the game. I'm glad that, you know, like I'm a Fire Emblem fan to the extent that I follow, like, a bunch of Fire Emblem people who make, like, specifically Fire Emblem YouTube videos. It's like, it's a niche, my guy. It's a niche. And I'm happy for those people because I know they're gonna go crazy over it. And I hope they bring it to more Fire Emblem games. Hope they bring it to more Earthbound games. But let's get away from this whole Disney Vault thing. That would be nice. But, like, I swear I'm not trying to be overly negative. But
just being objective. I mean,
I gotta be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's just having objectivity. I mean, I hate when people have this. They can't understand the concept of appreciating something and having love for something, but not just blindly supporting everything that they do. I mean, like, I love the Dragon Ball franchise, you know, I grew up with it, but I think Dragon Ball Super is an abomination. I think it's almost offensive that they put that product out there with how poorly animated it is. And you know, it obviously got better as time went on, but it's nothing compared to how modern anime is. And I'm saying that as somebody who doesn't really like anime. I only like three or four different animes. But I just think it's something like that where you get the knights in their shining armor that pick up their sword and shield to defend these companies and the way they do things. And it's like, no, I'm not going to defend, even though I love Dragon Ball and I love the characters, I'm not going to defend the fact that, like Toho, the owner of the, you know, as far as the anime distribution goes, of the most popular anime series of all time, can't figure out how to create a bigger budget for animators. Like, no, I'm sorry, I'll never understand that. Or that Nintendo has these limited releases with their games, or, you know, it's just having objectivity. Like, I can appreciate something and love something while also understanding that, like, Like, just because I appreciate you doesn't mean everything you do is right. I mean, it's like a relationship. Imagine dating somebody or being married to somebody, and then, you know, like, you love them, but does that mean you just support everything that they do? Like, if they do something really horrible, do you just say, oh, yeah, it's cool because I love you? It's like, no, you still love them, but you don't just condone anything that anyone does, you know?
Well, yeah, and honestly, loving them means that you need to be that person to call out their behavior sometimes. Because honestly, like, I mean, I think you take this into the long, long term. This erosion of trust in a brand, you do not want to be barking down this road. I mean, the most powerful brands are the most trusted brands. You know, Amazon is gigantic, and that's because, you know, you are pretty sure, and they do it 90% of the time, that when you order something with that Prime logo, that it's going to be there in 2 days. You know, Apple, if Apple were to ever have an issue where the privacy of their phones were to be compromised, that would be incredibly damaging to the brand. So much of their value is based on the trust that when you pick up an iPhone, that you're not going to be your information's not going to be indexed somewhere for it to be sold to marketers. I mean, there's trust is such an important quantity that Nintendo has certainly enjoyed the benefits of. I mean, you go back to the Nintendo seal of quality. That means something, it used to mean something. When you picked up a Nintendo game, you knew that like, you know, they put a lot of work into it. And those standards have changed. And, you know, nowadays they try and sell you stuff like, remember that Animal Crossing Mario Party game?
Oh, yeah.
Boy, I picked that up for $10 in the bargain bin.
Well, so you, I mean,
they tried to sell that for $60.
But that's
and they tried to, you know, not only sell you that game for $60, but also say like, okay, well, you need two extra figures to play four player.
Yeah.
All right,
I mean,
guys.
I mean, that's
all right.
And that's what that's one of those situations where somebody, one of these, I call them Nintendrones, you know, because they just blindly support and follow everything Nintendo does. But they'd be like, well, you should just be grateful that this game even got made, or you should just be grateful that it's at the price that it is, you know. And I always have a million analogies about that. But it's like, imagine you have like a best friend, right? And he steals like $5,000 from you. According to a lot of these people, they'd be like, well, at least he didn't steal $10,000 from you. Or if you're married to your wife and she cheats on you or something, and then it's like, well, at least, you know, she didn't cheat on you, you know, for a longer period of time. You know, it's just like, no, just because like it could be worse doesn't mean that it justifies the practice or behavior. And so I always think about that, and I'm like, I can't stand it. Makes me like grind my teeth when I see people, you should just be grateful. And it's like, no, like Nintendo should just be grateful that they're a company that's still operating, that's doing as well as it's doing, because a lot of companies can't say the same thing. I mean, Sega would love to be in Nintendo's position, but they're not even in the console market anymore. Like, they should be grateful that there are so many consumers that love their products. So, you know, when you're just telling people to be grateful for like terrible things, it's like, no, like, especially things that you can do better on, that you can deliver better on. So I just think there's so many parallels that I'm like, how can you not see how ridiculous of an assertion that is to say you should just be grateful, you know?
Yeah, not to mention all the help that Nintendo's been giving the scalping industry this year. I was just price checking the physical edition of Fire Emblem. They are selling an NES game that's 30 megabytes for $50. I mean, you're just basically buying the art book and all that stuff. But
wait, the Fire Emblem game is like $50.
It's $50 for the physical version that comes with a deluxe art book and a replica game box,
goodness,
instruction booklet and map, and a mini Nintendo Power collectible.
Well, people were praising this for having
a digital game download. You don't even get the cartridge.
Well, the funny thing is that people were talking about, I saw this on the internet, that people were saying this is a great release, you know, especially after Super Mario 3D All-Stars, because this is a price that makes more sense and is a good price. And I thought that it was like $30. It's $50? That's not a good price. I don't care what you're including with it. It's an NES game. Or is it SNES?
Yeah, I mean, it's NES. Yeah. Like I said, 30 megabytes is how large the game file is. I mean, you could run this game on a browser. No, but the icing on the cake is that they couldn't even be bothered to manufacture Switch cartridges for it. Like, my guy, it's 30 megabytes. You could have gotten the cheapest kind of Switch cartridge that you could have done. That's insane, dude. That is just absolutely bonkers. I wonder what might happen if someone buys this and then doesn't redeem the download code until after April 1st. But, dude, that's just insane. Oh, my goodness. It's like that, and that's why, like, I don't care for game anniversaries. All game anniversaries mean is that they're gonna try and shovel a bunch of garbage into your house so they can't fit. Which, like, I might like a thing like this in for, you know, a game I cared about more. And also, I just don't really like the art style of the first Fire Emblem game. Just gonna toss that out there. But you know, space for all this stuff. But $50, we're gonna have to. That's going to be a hard no for me. I got this incredible, cool Super Nintendo book that they released around the same time as the SNES Classic. And, I mean, they got it for, like, about half the price of this, and it's got a lot more artwork and information and all that stuff. But you know, it's the Fire Emblem extraction. I mean, celebration of all the people who've stuck with Fire Emblem. But, man, scalpers and Nintendo this year, man. It's been a good year for scalping. All right, well, I feel like I have to keep throwing it out there. I'm not, like, overtly trying to be negative. I don't know how you slice a $50 deluxe package that doesn't even come with a physical version of the game as a deal!
Yeah.
Especially because you know, Nintendo's probably not very confident in this selling in the West to a great degree. So there's going to be limited quantities and they're going to be gobbled up. And then, you know, half the people who are buying this are going to buy it from eBay at a 20 to 500% upcharge. So, you know, that's all good and well. These companies should develop like a workflow for accepting orders on their own. You know, like, if Nintendo could just take your order and have people pre-order and prepay, and then they, you know, manufacture the product and deliver it in, like, 2 months' time, I think that'd be a great way to avoid all of this hysteria. But also, they love the hysteria, you know, because once you see Fire Emblem, oh my gosh, it's $500 on eBay, the next time they do an anniversary edition, you're right there in line to buy it. So they also love this stuff, so I don't think it'll ever happen. Let's talk about Pokemon, Matthew. Pokemon had two big bits of news 2 days before the Crown Tundra came out. A prototype of Pokemon Sword was uncovered. This prototype was the date that was stamped inside of the build was March 2018. So it was like all the pre-production was done on it, and they just had to, you know, make put all the meat on the skeleton. And we're not going to link to the materials as we don't want to start any trouble, and I don't know the implications of that. And you can find it really easily if you go to, like, Video Games Chronicle or, you know, just do a Google search for it. But I want to set the stage a little bit here. This prototype shows an alternate title screen that has Pokemon the likes of Mega Rayquaza, Blastoise, and Greninja, who either didn't make it into the game until DLC or not at all. You know, it's also interesting that Mega Rayquaza is present. It kind of makes you wonder if they had a Mega Evolution inside of that game. But it certainly gives the impression, based on this and then other Pokemon that can be found in the build, that they never really planned on cutting the Pokedex down. Also, we can see that this uses a lot of Sun and Moon assets, and it seems like Sun and Moon was used as a base that they built on top of for this game. So, I don't know how much of this you have seen, Matthew, but your thoughts, please.
I'm trying. How should I say this while being nice? It's just kind of funny, honestly, It's funny to see what we ended up with and what the original prototype for the game may have been, kind of what their plans were. I just think it's funny to imagine, like, if we had gotten a port of Sun and Moon, which originally I was talking to you about this yesterday, and I was like, that would have been even worse than Sword and Shield, but I just think that it's... like, in all honesty, it probably wouldn't be any worse. Like, it you know, if you just got an up-resed port. I mean, I didn't like Sun and Moon. I gotta be honest, I haven't really liked Pokemon since after Black and White. I think that was the last great Pokemon game. I didn't enjoy X and Y, didn't enjoy Sun and Moon, and didn't enjoy Sword and Shield. Just personally, you know, I just don't really care for where the series has gone and how generic the art style's gotten, how poor some of the Pokemon designs have become. But... you know, and just from a competitive aspect, I could just, you know, dissect that a million different ways. But I just think it's funny, though, like you pointed out that Hop has like the exact same animations as the rival from Sun and Moon, I believe. And I remember people showed that when the game first came out, and they showed certain things Hop was doing, and it was identical to what the character did in Sun and Moon. But this just confirms that a lot of this game was just patchwork. You know, it was just taking assets from Sun and Moon and applying it to this game, reworking it, and doing the best they could. And I think it speaks to the ineptitude of Game Freak, honestly. And I think that team either needs an overhaul or they need to increase the size exponentially of the studio, because I just don't think they're competent enough to develop a AAA game on a home console. I think they were well suited to do the mobile stuff, but I think it's just a little outside of their ability at this point to produce a larger scale game. And it's funny too, because I just thought about this as well earlier, but you know, if they did resell Sun and Moon, I guarantee you it would have been a $60 game, because they still managed to sell Sword and Shield for $60, even though it was on par with all the 3DS games and DS and Game Boy Advance, which were all like $30 or $40, depending on which console you're talking about, which I just think is the funniest thing, that Sword and Shield, you know, you got the same level of production that you did from the 3DS games, but for a third more of the price. And I guarantee you, even if they had managed to port Sun and Moon and just did that instead, I think they still would have sold it for $60. But yeah, it's honestly just funny finding out more of this information. And it just, I think it, you know, it makes me a little nervous of where Pokemon's going, because Sword and Shield still ended up being one of the best-selling Pokemon games in the franchise. And I just wonder if they look at all the bad PR and negative attention this got as like a kick in the rear end, or if they look at it and say, hey, the game still did very, very well despite that. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing and putting out a mediocre product. But like I said, I just kind of laughed when I saw this, to be honest. Kind of confirmed what I already knew.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to see how many Pokemon that are in this build that were cut out, that they saw, like Pidgeot, Aerodactyl, Blastoise. Now, some of them we got back yesterday in the Tundra, and then some of them we got back with Isle of Armor and other patches and DLC and stuff. But yeah, none of this is surprising, and I think that's the disappointing part, is that like my theory with all of this is that this started as like just moving Sun and Moon to the Switch, and I think that's where some of the rumors for Pokemon Stars came from. And you know, they had all the stuff in here, like the Ultra Beasts and Mega Evolved Pokemon, all the Pokemon that they eventually cut out, and you know, here we are with you know, they just had a deadline, and they're like, all right, we can't fit all the Pokemon. All right, we can't make this game look any better. There's even some evidence to suggest that camera control might have been possible through the entire game, but we only get that in the wild area. So it's just, dude, it just kind of confirmed everything that we already suspected, but that people would, you know, like frown on if you mentioned it, because they really like Game Freak, and I really like them too. I think they're awesome, and I think they do a lot of things very well that that no one else does. I mean, the care that they take in making sure that every game, the battle mechanics are well thought out, that part of the game is amazing, and it's still great in Sun and Moon. And it's the only thing that really keeps me coming back to it, because some of the rest of it is just kind of a snooze fest where you just walk in a straight line and be interrupted by Hop 1,000 times to just, you know, check. All right, you're still walking in this straight line, right? All right, just keep walking through this straight line and you'll get to the town where you'll do the gym battle. And then after the gym battle, you go down another straight line, and then there will be another gym battle. And you know, it's definitely time for Pokemon to get a breath of fresh air in how the game works. But I don't know. I've also heard that, you know, it's interesting that Alpha Dream, the developers of the Mario and Luigi series, have gone bankrupt because the Switch prototype they were working on just didn't pan out. And, you know, going from a 3DS development environment to a Switch development environment is apparently really, really hard. And they just were not able to adapt. And it doesn't seem like Pokemon was able to adapt much either. I mean, this game, you know, as it turned out in the end, just feels like kind of a 3DS game that you were running on, like, the 3DS's successor. It doesn't feel like a game that you would have expected to see on the Wii U. And sitting next to any other Switch game, you know, it looks dated. And which isn't to, like, take away from the work that they put into it, because they still had to put years of work even to just get this far. I mean, maybe it's just such a hard adaptation to get your workflow in this new sort of environment. But man, it's just like it's kind of a shame, because, you know, even in that situation, I mean, they could have repackaged Sun and Moon and sold it for $60 with a slightly up-resed textures and stuff, and they, you know, still would have gotten 10 million copies easily. But, you know, poor guys at Alpha Dream, you know, they didn't have the chance to do anything with that with, you know, the Mario and Luigi series. So it's just kind of, it's kind of sad. But, yeah, really... I can't say I'm surprised.
Well, and it's funny because I feel like whatever Alpha Dream was doing probably would have turned out more technically sound than Pokemon did. I think with Pokemon, it's just way too big and popular to not continue that brand. Like, Pokemon will go on to the end of time. I mean, it's just that it's the most popular media franchise in the world. So, like, you know, but I have more faith in whatever Alpha Dream was doing, even if it looked like a Game Boy Advance game or a Nintendo DS game. I mean, that's my thing with Pokemon, is I'm like, you could easily narrow the focus and do less, and I think it would look more impressive if they still went with the... Like, here's a perfect example to me, is that Pokemon Let's Go is a much better looking game than Pokemon Sword and Shield. I remember when initially Sword and Shield was shown, people thought that Sword and Shield looked better, but if you look at the Pokemon designs, if you look at the environment designs, it just looks much more impressive. And I think it's because they narrowed the focus. They didn't try to do, like, this wild area and all these different things that they just really weren't capable of fleshing out or doing it the way that their vision probably was to do it. So, you know, I think Game Freak's a good team, but I just think it's one of those... where it's like, even as much as I love Rare, man, I think Rare started to lose their touch near the end of their relationship with Nintendo. I think they were still capable of putting out very, very fun games. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think it was like what it was when they originally started working for Nintendo. You know, and you saw some of that when they first went to Xbox, some of their stuff like Grabbed by the Ghoulies, and even though that game Kamek was fun, whatever that was called, that was supposed to be a pretty good game. But I think it was more like hit and miss for them. You know, Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, which I don't blame them for that, but you get the point. I think Game Freak's in one of those transition periods, man, where ever since they went to the 3DS with X and Y, it just hasn't been the same. Like I said, just even from the way the Pokemon look, you know, and I know the art style changed even before then, but I wish they would go back to that more jarring art style, that more like intimidating art style that Pokemon was known for in, you know, probably the first three generations for the most part. But just that, and just getting more creative with the Pokemon designs as well. You know, and also just like, I don't know, I'd like to see them do something different with the story. Like you know, where you don't just go and collect your badges and then you fight the bad guy at the end. Like, I just feel like Pokemon can be, like, good for so much more than that. Especially with Sword and Shield, because Sword and Shield didn't even have the fun aspect of having, what would you call, like those evil teams, like Team Rocket or Team Magma and Aqua, all those teams, like having something like that. I feel like Sword and Shield, playing through it, you just fight a gym, and then you walk to the next area, fight the next gym, go to the next area, fight the next gym. And I realized that's what made Let's Go, playing that again, Red and Blue, so much more fun, is I forgot that Team Rocket, in between, created all these different obstacles and all these different things for you to do that didn't make it this incredibly linear path where you only have one goal, essentially. And so I just feel like there's so many things that, even outside of a technical standpoint, I think even they've just kind of lost their touch, in the sense that, like, everything just lacks, I don't know, I want to say, like, what's that term? Lacks inspiration, you know? Or, like, creative inspiration. It just feels so lifeless now. Like Team Yell, like, the best, like, the evil team you come up with is just a group of people that are obsessed with one of the people you go up against, and they're not even really bad guys. They're kind of just, like, jerks, I guess.
I mean, I like that they're trying to do something different, and it's interesting that that's the only part of the Pokemon experience that they'll admit is, you know, getting tired, when I would say that pretty much all of it is getting pretty tired. I mean, you know, it's just every game's kind of coming down to, like, which new monsters are they going to do and which new gimmick are they going to throw in? And I think I wish they'd just throw out the gimmick. And if you want to cut the Pokédex, I'm fine with that if we get a better game on the other end of it. But I feel like we just kind of, like, that, you know, they were going to make their typical, like, you know, barely improved Pokémon game, and they ran out of time, so they cut almost half of the Pokemon out of the game, and then sold it back to you for like $60 with, like, or I think it was $30 for the expansion pass, which, you know, has other features. But, you know, let's get into some of that as we're segueing over the Crown Tundra. So the Crown Tundra is released. I've had the chance to play it for about an hour and a half. Matthew has not had the chance to play it. So let's just dive into that. I had no story spoilers, but, you know, there'd probably have to be a story for me to spoil it. You arrive to the Crown Tundra. You see a guy who looks oddly like Chairman Rose, and you end up going into the where this new expansion pass rests its hat, the Dynamax Adventures. So you go into a Max Lair, and the way that this works is you will form a team of four. You'll either have computers or people that you can invite in a group via local or online. And instead of bringing your Pokemon into the fight, you are given a choice of three rental Pokemon that you have to choose within like 15 seconds. And so you have a short amount of time to kind of build a team out of it, and you do a series of Dynamax battles. Now, these aren't the same as the regular Dynamax battles inside of Pokemon Sword and Shield. They don't have that shield feature, you know, where you have to, like, attack them five times and then their shield breaks and then you can do damage. So they don't have that system. You just fight a Dynamax version of the Pokemon. They can attack multiple times in one turn. And same deal, where if four people faint, then you're out of there. When you beat a Pokemon, you can choose to catch it and swap out your current rental for that Pokemon, and then you work your way, you know, just kind of rinse and repeat. There's some events that can happen in between that either swap your Pokemon or give you some items, and you rinse and repeat that until you get to the end of the den with a legendary Pokemon. You carry your damage and status issues with you, and so there's some strategy there in switching Pokemon and preparing for whatever's in the back of the lair. I did this part alone because they suggest that you do, and that's, I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's an awful experience. You're doing a Dynamax battle where, you know, there's five turns. There's five Pokemon that attack for every turn, and you have control over one of those Pokemon. And so, you know, let me just tell you the genius of the comms that I had there. So one computer selects Weezing, who has neutralizing gas. It gets rid of every ability on the field, and they don't work properly. The other person picks a speed boost Blaziken, so we have a Blaziken with no speed boost, and Weezing doing neutralizing gas, and then inside of the battle, they don't really even, you know, do anything intelligent. They'll Blaziken was using coaching, which boosts the defense and an attack of your other Pokemon, and so the other guy who's getting those big stat boosts, who is a physical attacker, you know, just refused to use any attacks. And so it's just kind of frustrating, because I didn't lose. It's still incredibly easy. But that's my problem with Dynamax battles in general, is that the only one that was really challenging to us were just like kind of like a handful of them, maybe like two or three out of every Gigantamax Pokemon we've ever fought. And then the Mewtwo battle was really hard, and I really liked the challenge with the Mewtwo battle, and I thought that's probably, I assume that's more of what we were getting here, but it's not. You fight a Dynamax version of them. The computers aren't very smart either that you fight against. You know, like the legendary Pokemon I eventually got to was Suicune, and he, you know, he's a water type, and our team was composed of a rock and steel type, and a fire type, and then a poison type. My man never used a water move on anybody. So, you know, that was interesting, to say the least. And so we eventually just won easily. And whenever you beat legendary Pokemon in this, some people might like this or hate it. I kind of, you know, hate it. You automatically catch the Pokemon. There's no chance that you'll fail the catch when you get to the end of that den. Which I get, like, you know, you don't want to, you know, frustrate people, but also, like, you know, just figure out a different way to do it. But it seems like they just keep trying to rest their hat on this whole thing where, you know, why is Pokemon Go popular? Because you fight the big Pokemon. And everybody loves fighting the big Pokemon, the big raid battles, and I just feel like this whole game was, like, you know, made inside of Pokemon Go's shadow, and that's not what people like about Pokemon Go. They like going on adventures together. It's just... so yeah, that whole feature, I mean, it could be cool if you get four people and you get to strategize a little bit. I like the randomness of it, of like, oh yeah, I see that you got a Blaziken with speed boost. Oh man, let me, you know, choose this other guy where we can do like a stat swapping move or something like that. And you can transfer your speed to me and we could have a fast shuckle or something. I don't know, like, you can get into that stuff. You just have to find four people who want to do that with you, because when you're paired with a computer, they're just going to, like, I mean, you know, at best, they're just going to be distracting and time-consuming. At worst, they're going to actively undermine your efforts to win the battles. And so, so they railroad you into that thing, and then after that, they have like approximately like what must have been like 15 minutes of just text that you have to read through about this is the king of the bountiful harvest and the legendary Pokemon that's in the trailer. And then there's other legendary Pokemon that you can get that were also in the trailer, the birds, the Regis, all these legendary Pokemon. And instead of like creating sort of sequence for how you'll meet these Pokemon, they just have them all, like, they just send you through all of this text talking about how you might find these Pokemon, and they give it to you all at once, which I like from the perspective of, like, I can go any direction that I want, but the negative side of that is that I have to sit through an essay of them explaining how to find these guys, because, you know, they couldn't be bothered to do that in a more interesting way. I mean, you know, there's games are constantly communicating with you. And, you know, it's the way that Zelda Breath of the Wild gets you to pay attention to what's on top of the mountain is through the geography of the stage that you're on and some of the challenges that they throw your way. If they make it rain, then you're less likely to climb and more likely to follow a more linear path. Pokemon couldn't be bothered to do any of that, so they just kind of drop a bunch of little huts in places where you catch the legendary Pokemon around. And you know, where I stopped playing the game was where I got to, I was walking around, and you know, I got lost because the map doesn't update your trainer's location based on where you are. The map just says you're in this area, which is hilarious because in that prototype, we saw that they tried to bring the minimap from Sun and Moon over, but I guess they just couldn't be bothered to get it to work in this game. And it really would have helped because I've got no idea where I am. All the different areas look the same, so it's kind of hard to navigate. And I just kind of stumbled upon one of these huts, and I'm like, okay, what's this about? And it's like, to enter, you got to solve a puzzle, put a stone that doesn't change in the first Pokemon in your party. You're like, oh, so I put an Everstone on, and then sure enough, you just talk to that, and then it's on, and then you get into the tower, and it's like, oh, is this a puzzle or something? You just walk on the lights, and then the battle starts. I mean, it's just, you know, everything in this package feels like it's just kind of minimum viable product. I think there might be a cool story and a cool lore behind the new legendary they're pushing, so that might be interesting to see. At the same time, the first town that you arrive to is called Freezington, so I'm not really all that excited to discover the story, because so far they're like, oh, it's a snow town, let's call it Freezington. My boys, is that really your final draft? But anyway, I'm through like an hour and a half of it. I'm going to finish it. I love Pokemon so much that I'm having my own fun with it. You know, I'm going in there with level 50 Pokemon and beating level 70 Pokemon that are in the very sparse trader battles that you participate in. And so I'm having fun with that part, but yeah, other than that, it's basically the Isle of Armor, but it's snowing and you're just roaming around catching a bunch of legendary Pokemon.
Yeah, well, and I haven't gotten a chance to try it out, but I figured it'd be a lot like the Isle of Armor, which I didn't very much enjoy. It felt like a lot of it was just, you know, like walking around and not
like
really
filler.
It feels so unnecessary. So yeah, we'll see how it ends up turning out when I get around to it, but
yeah, which we'll have like full, like more of a review sort of discussion at the end of next week in the next podcast. But yeah, I mean, I gotta say, like, just in general, I'm not super jazzed about this. And the Pokemon that they brought back some cool guys. I saw Nidoking. I'm like, oh man, Nidoking. And then I saw Aerodactyl flying through the air. Oh man, Aerodactyl's so awesome. But they mostly just brought back legendaries, you know, like my favorite Pokemon's not in the game, you know, some of the more obscure picks, but still like cool Pokemon like Parasect, not in the game. They picked like a handful from every generation and the rest of them are just legendaries. And for, like generation 7, it's just they brought all the Tapus back and all the Ultra Beasts back, but none of the Pokemon, which you know, I'm a little offended by, because the Ultra Beasts look like Yu-Gi-Oh monsters. I'm just going to say it. They look like Yu-Gi-Oh monsters, Matthew.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of how they started to do legendaries and even Dynamaxing and Gigantamaxing. I just think all that stuff's kind of ruined Pokemon Mega Evolutions. I think it all should have stayed away.
There's too many legendary Pokemon now. I mean, to where the point where, like, legendary is the wrong word. It's just, like, slightly, overpowered, like, stat-boosted Pokemon. I mean, that's really what they are at this point, because you can't build an interesting mythos and lore around, let's see what the Ultra Beast, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 of these things, and then 4 Tapu Finis, and they try to do that. I mean, it's kind of interesting how they're, like, from a different dimension, and that's why they're so strange-looking and yada yada, but it's just that there's too much of this stuff that they try and rest their hat on. Look, Pokemon is about going on an adventure. It's about realizing your potential. It's about growing as a person. And, like, the legendary Pokemon are always a fun thing to have in the background of that, but that was never the core of the first game. And somehow the first game did very well. What do you know? But ever since that, they just have focused so hard on the legendary angle. And that was cool in, like, third and fourth gen, but after that, it's just like, okay guys, I'm ready for a break. Can we make a game about something else? And it feels especially not special when they just jam them into, like, you know. So the lore of Gen 8 is that every legendary Pokemon is just living in the same cave. It's okay. Okay. I mean, they got to bring them back somehow because people love legendary Pokemon, I guess. But I just, you know, it's like either find an interesting way of doing it or just don't do it. But yeah, this is all just like kind of disappointing in the window dressing of hearing that at one point they were thinking of doing a Pokemon MMO back when Leaf Green was the latest game. And I'm just like, man, take me there. Take me there, Game Freak. You could do better than this. And I hate saying that. When I first like got to the region, I'm like, oh, here we are, another new Pokemon adventure. Man, this feeling never gets old of just like discovery in a Pokemon place. But it's just like, you know, even the Crown Tundra is full of all these Pokemon. I'm like, have I caught this guy before? I can't remember because I haven't played this game in months and they just packed this region. You know, you get I've completed the Pokédex up until this point and I get to the place to receive my new part of the Pokédex for this region. And already it's like you've caught 136 guys. Just like, oh my gosh, out of how many? There's not going to be more. I don't think there's going to be any more than 200. So basically I've got like a handful of guys I'm missing and I just got here. And so like, there's not that really that sense of discovery except for all the legendary Pokemon, that I just like, you know, don't care for that much. You know, I caught Regirock. I felt nothing. Like, I mean, back in Ruby and Sapphire, there weren't that many of them. And in the context of that game, there was only the Regirock guys, the Latios twins, and then the big legendaries. And so it was even more special there, but, you know, at this point, I'm just like, eh. He's not even good. Get your low tier self out of your Regirock.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's, yeah, I just, I really hope that, and like, I don't like the nastiness of a lot of the backlash. Like, you can criticize a product without, you know, criticizing the people who make it. Everybody who's making this game is just doing the best they can with what they've been given. I think a lot of the problems could be solved with more time, more resources, or a bigger team, even like a supporting team to make all the assets. You know, Breath of the Wild, a lot of that game was made by Monolith Soft, who specialized in making games with very large spaces, like Xenoblade Chronicles X. You know, I'd hope for some sort of arrangement like that, where they can keep the essence of Pokemon, but just, you know, give the visuals a boost, give the scale of the adventure a boost, you know, really, really tamp up the intensity of the adventure. I would love to see them just take a better crack at all this. But until then, we have a pretty good little distraction in Crown Tundra. You probably already bought it anyway if you played Isle of Armor because you're trying to get that bundle. But, you know, I think I'll have fun with the Dynamax Adventures. We're going to do a playthrough on Cotrello Games with that. And so, you know, we'll have our fun. But also, like, come on, guys. Let's work a little longer on the next one.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, well, that brings us back to the end of this episode. We will be in your feeds next week with more of this Pokemon Crown Tundra stuff. And, I mean, I think we're just going to have to throw in a subject about, like, here's a game we really like and we're going to say nice things about. Because it just feels like we're litigating every week. But anyway, if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review on whatever your podcast service of choice is. Check out Cotrello Games on YouTube and all that jazz. And we will see you next time for another edition of We the People.